Blog Talk Radio.
Nothing has changed.
It has gotten worse. And we see Hillary got a larger portion of the black vote in 2016 South Carolina primaries than Obama did in 2008-2012. Now, I started off with saying I do not support Obama. I have never supported Obama because as a political activist, I feel it is important to do my homework. And when I looked at Obama, it reminded me of what my sainted mother always said to me. We all are what we do. And I looked to see what Obama had done in Chicago, and I took my mother's words to heart. We all are what we do, and Obama's going to continue doing what he did in Chicago for the people of color. Next to nothing. And then, when he became president, he continued with next to nothing and did worse. We knew he couldn't do anything, but we expected, and we had a right to expect. Not we, I didn't vote for him, I can't take credit for that. The people who were supporting him had a right to expect that he would use his office to speak out on our behalf on many issues. Instead, and as I've told people who were very angry with me in the black community about not supporting Obama, I says, well, you see what's about to come. And how did he use his office or his running for office in terms of black people? He used that to put us down. He said black men do not take care of their responsibilities. And I made people angrier by retorting, don't you understand what a first-year political science would know, what a first-year psychologist would know, that you cannot expect a person to be responsible without having rights that enable them to be responsible. No responsibility without rights. Now, Obama is supposed to be an intellectual, graduated from Harvard University with good grades. He didn't know that. He made several speeches ignoring this reality. Now, how do we get worse from that? Well, getting worse is we have Hillary Clinton, who in her earlier life, who she likes to talk about her earlier life, that she claims how she supported a black movement and she marched and she on. But we also know she supported Barry Goldwater in her earlier life. But you see, we're not going to go there. But one of the things where we must go is I heard someone say that suppose Trump gets elected and he does what he said he was going to do. And I say to them, then he would be the first president to ever do what he said he was going to do. That is not an issue. And if we look at Mr. Obama, there was candidate Obama and President Obama, two different people. And we see Hillary Clinton manages to be two different people at all times, Secretary Clinton, Bill Clinton's wife, and candidate Hillary. She just goes on, and in the same paragraph, she can take both sides of any issue. We have been lied to constantly. But what is the important thing in this election campaign? The important thing that we must understand is that we are still the caboose of the train. And more important than that is that the so-called, and I use the term so-called black elite, is very happy with that. And I point to my own failures first. I have tried and tried and tried to make our people understand what is real and what is imaginary. And I must tell you that we as an organization have had small successes. And our success is to frighten the government And frightening the government can be very dangerous. When we started talking about community control in 1962, in 1963, the government knew how dangerous that was because we had black communities. Harlem, Bed-Stuy, Watson, you can name it. It was all over the country. And I said, to the chagrin of many people, Elijah Muhammad mostly, when I said, we are in charge of the most valuable territory, land in this country. We are in central cities. And if we control our central cities in America, that's working at our own interest in our cities for ourselves. What a position we would be in. And I use the New York City Board of Education budget, which is $20 billion today. And it has always been, as long as I've been counting it, as one of the largest budgets in the world, around 19, 20, 21, 22. Can you imagine New York City, that budget, being controlled by people of color? And the New York City Board of Education population at that time was 60 to 70%. Now it's 70 to 80%, and we control nothing. And so, you know, always our eye is not on the ball. It is not Trump that we have to look at. It is not Hillary we have to look at. It is not Bernie we have to look at. We have to look at America and our position in it. And if we want to look to electoral politics, we have to look back to when we first tried to make our major attempt and when we had our first successes with voting in the South and the 1965 Freedom Democratic Party that went to the Democratic Convention to be seated, they were defeated. And as Fannie Lou Hamer said it so perfectly, I repeat it over and over again, we the people of color were ready for freedom, but the black loyalist Democrats who supposedly represented us were not. And so the question is not Democrat or Republican, but we have to make a switch quickly to what's happening today and in Zimbabwe. And remember what was said with Robert Mugabe and the boys in the bush to get their freedom. None but ourselves. And with respect to Larry, I say ourselves. We define them of people who are real, who mean what they say, and support freedom for all. And that's a minority within a minority, black, brown, yellow, you know, white, et cetera. We have a row to hoe, and this election does nothing but remind us of the struggle that we have to wage, the minds that we have to win over, because our people think like a contractor who came and works with me from Guyana. And he says, I don't care what Mr. Obama does. As long as he uses the toilet in the White House, that's good enough for me. Well, I fear that much of black America sees the same thing. Symbolism is all that matters. While our children are miseducated, unemployed, underfed, and all of the movements that work to change that have been forgotten by our people, the people who should be speaking out in support of our political prisoners who understood this a long time ago and worked hard to change it. And this is where we have to go and bring our people there. And so I'm going to back off a little bit. Betty's given me the sign here. It's hooks and knives and daggers and all of this. I get off the phone. I'm off. And I'm going to turn it back to Betty.
All right. I see we're really filling up the studio board tonight. So I'm going to be brief. I had hoped that Brother Razakhan would join us this
Barbara is on the line. Yeah, Nation Town Museum Research is just listening
in. Before we introduce you, we're going to have Larry come on, but I was going to read some excerpts of your open letter to the community, Rosa Khan. I didn't know if you were going to comment on it, but if you don't mind,
okay,
I just want to paraphrase what Brother Rosa Khan said. He says, as long as he can remember, this government has been trying to convince him that he's crazy. And why? Because this government makes no sense, and what they do, they're the only government that has treated people like, the only government that treated people the way we're being treated was in Nazi Germany. And he goes on to tell how Goebbels knew how to mobilize the fears of the unemployed masses as the Great Depression hit Germany, and the incredible role that Goebbels played, which was deeply rooted in his contempt for humanity, and how he urged people in his lust for power and confusion, he invented the technique of mass persuasion. And he talks about how in that election in 1933, what was their message? They just told a lie and they made it stick. And when we look at how the press is supporting Trump, I think this is what we see. The question is, what in the world is wrong with black people? And without further ado, I want to acknowledge that we've got 917, last four digits, 4283, and two other guests, 215, last two digits, 2471. 225, last four digits, 5646 in the house. Brother Larry, are you ready?
I am indeed. I am indeed, and I thank you first, as I always do. I want to express my love, my strength, my solidarity to you, Sister Betty, and with you, I should say, with Brother Ralph Pointer, and of course with our illustrious Lynn Stewart, and all political prisoners who have been fighting for many, many decades, who are being tortured in the gulags. And I repeat, tortured both physically and psychologically in the U.S. gulags that some people refer to as prisons. Let me say right off the bat, you mentioned Goebbels. It's very... I would urge people, and this might shock some folks, but I would urge people to pick up Adolf Hitler's Mein Kampf, which I would urge them to pick it up and read it, and you will see, I read it when I was very young, and since that time I've read it at least five or six more times, and the thing that stands out to me and with me in my mind is how, and if you read it, you'll see it for yourself, that the Führer, Hitler, actually referred to what the Americans, quote-unquote Americans, what had been done to the indigenous native people in the United States. Read it for yourself. Read it. Don't say, oh, that was Adolf Hitler. Yeah, it was Adolf Hitler, and he pointed out where he got his ideas, and the Nazi Party got their ideas, okay? We need to be cognizant of this. We need to understand this.
What's the
not
name
only as black people, all right, of African descent and of the African diaspora, but quite frankly, as people who are oppressed, black, white, brown, red, and yellow, throughout Mother Earth, throughout the world. Black people in America have got a choice. The choice is to wake up and resist or to facilitate our own genocide. Again, we wake up and we resist organized resistance, or two, we can facilitate our own genocide. And unfortunately, it is the latter that has been going on and is going on presently. The Democrats and the Republicans are different sides of the exact same coin. We must understand, as W.E.B. Du Bois correctly said many decades ago, may God forgive us if ever again we support Republicans or Democrats. What did he mean by that? Common sense. So I'm going to be succinct. Perhaps I will be able to comment later on in the program and the show. Thank you. Love you all. Stay strong. All power to the people. And I'm going to sign off for now. But as I said, perhaps later I can comment. But I want to be respectful and let others comment as well. Thank you very much.
All right, Larry. We thank you. We definitely want you to come back and give us some of the discussion that you started two programs ago on the two-party system. But at this time, I want to acknowledge that Sister Lynn Stewart is in the house, and unfortunately, I guess she had other activities this evening. Sister Lamb is not. So, Sister Lynn, you're on.
Okay. Can you hear me?
I can hear
Am
you.
Am I coming through?
I'm coming.
Very good. Well, I do want to say that having listened to Bernie Sanders' acceptance speech in Vermont, and when he said that racial problems will be dealt with when we deal with the class system, I have to respectfully, maybe not so respectfully, disagree with that analysis. Because race permeates in a very different way than the way that Bernie Sanders and indeed the entire left has always viewed. They have always viewed it as we will all make a revolution for the working class, and because blacks are workers and whites are workers, there'll be a great getting up morning and everybody will be equal and everybody will be brothers and sisters and all will be well. I don't think so. It's going to take a different kind of change, and that kind of change is not, in my view, encompassed by the electoral process. I am with Emma Goldman, and Ralph and I have had many a discussion, as you can well imagine, on this, when she said if elections were that important, they would have done away with them. Well, they've done away with voting rights. They haven't quite done away with elections, but I still believe this is all just fluff. This is all just mirrors and smoke, and that the real struggle is a different struggle and one we will engage in, and we will engage in it at the same time that we try to bring our brothers and sisters home from prison. And on this, the first day of March, which is also the opening day of Women's Month in solidarity with women prisoners, I do want to bring to everybody's attention that Ana Belén Montes, that I have spoken about, this is the woman who engaged in espionage, so as to speak, as a matter of conscience, because she believed that Cuba was being abused by the United States with its spying, with its bringing in of all sorts of information to hurt the Cuban people. And in order to give them a chance at self-defense, as she put it, she fought back by giving them the information that she is a high-ranking member in the Department of Defense, Defense Intelligence, actually, occupied. So we remember this day of International Women's Day, Ana Belén Montes. Also, there is action on behalf of another sister who is at Carswell, my old prison camp, my old death camp, as Ralph would have it, and that is, of course, Afia Siddiqui. She is a Muslim woman. She has literally hundreds of thousands of supporters in Pakistan. She was kidnapped, now they say it's called rendition, from Pakistan, brought to this country under terribly questionable circumstances, had a show trial in which she was silenced and sent away and shut up by the judge, finally resulting in a sentence of 86 years in prison. She has been at Carswell in the special unit for women who are political. For some reason, I know I have one privilege, and that is skin privilege. And I did not end up there. I ended up in the hospital as far as well. But Afia is in this special unit along with Ana Belen Montes, along with Marius Mason, who, of course, was very instrumental on behalf of the Earth First people in attacking a research program at the University of Michigan. That said, and not to become long-winded, which is seems like it's epidemic sometimes on this. I didn't mean that as not a compliment, but it's to be that way sometimes. I just want to say there is going to be a demo for AFIA on Friday, March 11th. Now, we'll get a chance to talk about this again next Tuesday, but bear it in mind, Friday, March 11th, 4 to 6 p.m., and from there we're going to get on the train and go uptown to Fifth Avenue or to Lenox Avenue at 125th, where there is going to be an event which honors Sekou Odinga. So bear both of those, pencil in March 11th as your day to honor political prisoners, male and female. I do want to also say that Bernie Sanders, in saying what he said about class struggle, ignores what has gone on for centuries, and that is that the oppressor class, the capitalist class, which oppressed both slaves and serfs, but slaves in a very particular way, has been known about and written about and ridiculed for many, many centuries. We were fortunate enough to be in Boston this past weekend, meeting with old supporters and new, and we were with Kazi Touré, who, of course, is one of our oldest friends, an emancipated freedom fighter who is in the world doing great work. He is chairing, actually, or he is instrumental in the Boston rally for Afia Siddiqui. But while we were there, we were fortunate to go to Bread and Puppets presentation of a homage to Oscar Lopez Rivera. And it was very telling. If you don't know Bread and Puppet from Glover, Vermont, get yourself acquainted. Peter Schumann and his wife Ilka have for years been putting on political theater. They put it on in New York at the Theater for a New City, and they put it on up in Vermont. I understand that during my time in the death camps, they had a portion of the program that was two people singing a love song to each other, and when it was over, Peter would announce that that was a representative of Ralph and myself, and to please support me. But he and Ilka sent me a nursery rhyme, circa 1764, and I just want to share it with you for a moment of the more things change, the more they stay the same. English nursery rhyme. They hang the man and flog the woman that steal the goose from off the common. But let the greater villain loose that steal the common from the goose. The law demands that we atone when we take things we do not own, but leaves the lords and ladies fine who take things that are yours and mine. Just bear it in mind. Don't lose sight. Keep up the fight. Don't be distracted by all the hoopla. Keep your eye on what matters, and that is liberation for ourselves and certainly for the political prisoners who remain locked away. Thanks, Ralph.
Thank you, Sister Lynn. I think that we need to keep that nursery rhyme as part of our program. We may need to record it and play it right after we play Nina Simone. I wish I knew how it would feel to be free. I want to emphasize that from time to time, I try to keep the mics open, but when I hear background noise, I have to mute it. But Brother Razakhan, You're in the house. Would you give us a shout out, please?
Oh, hi. How's everybody doing? Power
all right,
to
you're
the
on,
people
Brother
and Freeland. Yeah.
Okay, can you give us a few words?
Yeah, now, one thing I wanted to add to what you said about what I put in the letter, also that U.S. Senator Prescott Bush, who was the father of George Bush and the grandfather of the Bushes, the two brother Bushes, was a part of that Nazi machine, and he helped finance that. And in 1942, they wound up, never arrested him. They charged him and the Fords, the Rockefellers, all of them guys were financing the German machine. And this is why they still try to be exactly like Germany was then, Jeff Sessions. Everybody knew that he was the Alabama Grand Dragon. You know what I mean? This is why he jumped on Bush's bandwagon the minute he refused to denounce the Ku Klux Klan, because that's his crew. We got an uphill battle.
Yes, it is so true. When we talk about Germany, so much of support for the Nazis came from Americans, and so much of the theory of Nazism came from the Americans. They just had different people. This whole thing of eugenics, this they learned it from America. The genocide of the indigenous people, they learned it from America. And let us always remember that before Hitler decided to make European colonies, he was angry because they shut Germany out of the African colonies. And he said, if I can't have colonies in Africa, I will have colonies in Europe. And so much of this of evil has begun and was learned by the world from America. Not to say that America generated or was the beginning of all evil. What I will say is America is perfecting
yes,
the evil.
Indeed.
It spews upon the body politic of the world. Betty?
All right, I see Sister Lamb is in the house, and as always, we defer to her because she keeps us up to date with our situation, with our political business. And I want to acknowledge that Brother Joel is in the house and Sister Mary Neal, and we will be calling on them shortly. Sister Ann, can you give us an update from New York City, Jericho?
I certainly can. How are you this evening? Sorry I'm late. I was just getting in from work.
Hey, we all wish we could just get in from work because so many of us have been unemployed. Keep to work. Tell us something.
This is true. Hold on, because I just got something from Matulu. So let me just locate it, and then we will be able to...
Always take time to hear from our political prisoners, and
yeah.
We have so much work cut out for us, and I know I'm speaking to the choir. The
Hopefully
work must
not.
Be... Right, because I heard something discouraging.
We don't want to hear...
Go ahead, Dan.
Well, there's a lot of discouraging things, but let's not be discouraged. It's very easy... Just got this legal update on Matulu's denial of release, which I just sent out by email, which is posted by family and friends of Matulu Shakur. So this is officially legit. Yes. Dear family and friends and supporters, like many of you, I was of the belief that I was to be released from prison effective February 10, 2016. That belief was based on the 30 years I was required to serve. I have fulfilled that commitment while following all rules and regulations like any other prisoner would be expected to. Having been sentenced under Federal Statute 4205A, any person serving more than 45 years, because he was sentenced to 60, must serve 30 years to receive mandatory release. For the past 30 years, my target release date has been February 10, 2016. Whosoever had legitimate concerns had the same time to come forward to argue that I should not be released. To deny me release at this stage, the Parole Commission must determine that I have either, quote, repeatedly or seriously violated the rules of the institution, or there exists a great probability that the inmate will commit any federal, state, or local crime following his release, end quote. The parole commissioner's function is now limited in scope. The idea is that the society as a whole is represented by the parole commission. Oh, good Lord. We aren't serious, doo-doo. Hopefully, the broader society has embraced a willingness to heal and move towards reconciliation. We have an obligation to ensure that the parole commission's process is informed, fair, impartial, and as unbiased as possible. Many of the individuals that have opposed my release and questioned my resolve to be a productive member of society have had the benefit of mainstream media to project their views. I have endured the disadvantage of not having that benefit. My story has not been heard through the mass media, but I hope my call for reconciliation has been heard by some and has had an impact, especially on young people. What we have been tasked with is difficult, and victory will have been hard fought. There is yet another stage of the struggle, but also an opportunity for our voices to be heard. I am hoping your messages can be shared with the Parole Commission as it makes a decision regarding my release or further incarceration. Incarceration can be a catalyst to produce individuals that emerge with a newfound moral compass. I have been privileged to witness that growth and development in many other prisoners throughout my incarceration. As a result, there have been many good works produced both inside and outside of these walls. I would not be who I am today without all of you, and I can only hope to have been a positive influence in your lives and in the lives of young men and women who have been young men who have been incarcerated with me, and young women as well. It will be helpful to gather your thoughts and memories of our experience and to share your sincere observations with the Parole Commission. Please feel free to circulate this letter and my request to others who have had similar experiences that they would like to share. Please address letters to the Parole Commission, specific instructions are below, but email them to both my attorney, Peter Shea, and he puts his email, and my family at MatulaShakur@hotmail.com for review before they are forwarded to the board. I will not be personally reviewing letters. My son Tupac acknowledged in the context of the struggle to overcome oppression that we've come so far, but we still have so far to go. To that I say we must continue to be guided by the essence of our circumstances that has brought us to these points, which encourage us to be principled, honest, and continue to search for the truth. Brother Kendrick Lamar taught us to pimp a butterfly. From that, we must always remember that we can evolve and to have faith in the power of transformation that has been evident throughout the saga of our journey. I thank you in advance for your continued love and support, Dr. Matulu Shakur. So if we go to MatuluShakur.com, there will, I guess, because he said there were instructions further below, I'm sure there will be more specific instructions on the website. So you address the letters to the Parole Commission, but they get emailed to his attorney and to his family and friends. So if you go to MatuluShakur.com, I'm sure you will find this information very important. So that's Matulu, you know, as always, straight ahead, as he says, stiff resistance. He's gearing up for the parole hearing, which is supposed to happen early in April.
Well, thank you so much for that, Ann. But you when you mentioned that, you mentioned two things. First, the law. And we
right.
know that the law has been a major instrument of oppression of people of color and the poor in America.
Well, for
and
sure.
then you mentioned morality. Being true to what you say, he has served his time.
Yes, he has.
And as Ward Churchill says, we cannot appeal for morality from those who have none.
Absolutely.
And we must respect our own power, and we must exercise our power politically and socially to force the freedom of our political prisoners.
Absolutely.
All right, Sister Ann, we want to thank you. I want to acknowledge to our listening family this evening that many of our speakers that you have been listening to this evening will be on our panel on political prisoners at the John Jay College the weekend of May 20th through the 22nd on our political prisoners panel. And we certainly hope you will come down and join us.
Oh,
secondly,
yeah.
This Saturday, March 5th, the International Women Workers Committee is sponsoring a parade through Harlem all the way to El Barrio to support the sisters from Puerto Rico in their 10-point program for housing, for public education, for single-payer health care, to stop police murder, etc. And we hope that you will meet us at the Harriet Tubman
Statue
Boulevard in Harlem at 12:30. One of our keynote speakers will be Sister Marilyn Zuniga, that warrior who stood up against the FOP and allowed her students to learn the history of political prisoners in this country and supported Mamiya Abu-Jamal and was fired. Want everybody to know she's still going strong and she's still fighting them. With that in mind, we have a lot of people in the queue tonight. I want to acknowledge that Brother Joel is in the house, and if he wants to give us his analysis on Bernie, Hillary, and that person they call Trump, he's got the mic. Joel, can you hear us?
Maybe not.
Yes, hello.
There you are.
Hi there, Joel.
Hello.
We hear you. Go ahead.
Oh,
we
yes.
hear you.
Okay, well, I saw that, actually, I saw that Bernie just won Oklahoma, which is surprising, you know, that part of the, and also they say that he's carrying the rural counties, not the cities. So anyway, the way I look at it, the people that are voting for Bernie are saying in their vote that they want something better, that they want something different, that they're not as afraid of the S word as they once were, that they're more afraid of the C word, capitalism, I think, as developing, that they have been. And I don't, I don't really have that much confidence that Bernie is really any kind of a socialist, but at least he puts that word out there. And unlike him, the people that vote for him, I believe, mean what they're saying, even if he doesn't. And functionally, I see Bernie as more of a sparring partner to Hillary than a real opponent. And I'm sure that as things progress, he's going to throw his support to her in the end, whatever. But as I said, I don't want to dwell on the phoniness of some of his claims, because I think that people's expectations are being raised, and it's not that helpful to add to the cynicism by a purely negative analysis about him as a political phenomenon. Now, I had read that we were going to discuss tonight why there's a bigger outpouring among African Americans for Hillary than there was for Obama. And you would think that would be identified with more. And I think there also that there's a panic and a desperation that's bringing a lot of people to their feet. There's a real, especially with the death of Scalia, reminding people of the Supreme Court composition, that there's a panic of what it would be like if Republicans that are running now, that are so far, I mean, they're sort of so right-wing that they're in orbit. Mm-hmm. Each one, you know, it's sort of like, oh, the good news is that that Trump was defeated in Texas. The bad news is he was defeated by Ted Cruz, who lost his campaign.
Right, it's like going from bad to worse.
to the right of Trump in many ways, you know, he's not a real conservative. But then again, if you listen to what he says, he's pretty close to a real fascist. that real conservative wing of the Republican Party is also appealing to really fascist sentiments. Not that the Democratic Party isn't, because it comes down to America being an imperialist power robbing the rest of the world, and even whatever benefits are promised are conditioned on keeping the United States the top banana, and a war against the entire world. The liberals, Republicans, at least, you know, the politicians, really agree with that, and I don't like to think it, but that kind of mentality even infects the rank and filers who vote for them. It's hard to believe that nobody is conscious that America robs the rest of the world through imperialism, and that if it stops, that some of the benefits might be cut down. So it's a rough situation, but I believe that the fact that people are participating more, even though they're doing it in a distorted way, because they have no real people's organizations that could pull everything in a different direction. So the fact
well,
that
we
the
hope that by
all,
the
was
my mic alive? We hope that by the next election, always, you know, hope that we would have an organization to take advantage of the people who are participating and put something forward for real that the people could enjoy. And one of the things that I believe we in the left have to swallow and accept our failure is that the single-payer health care issue was out there. It was raised by the people. And before Obama was elected, it was something like 75% of the people wanted single-payer health care. And Obama came in, and he said it's off the table. He did a swan dive on that. And I fear, while I'm talking about Mr. Obama, that he will do another swan dive on his Supreme Court nominee. So we are here, and we have our work cut out for us, but we have to make people aware. We have to bring them in, and the people are ahead of us, because every leftist organization, socialist, communist, liberal, radical, should have been out front with the single-payer health care with the people, and we would have had a platform. We could have forced it. Well, it hasn't gone away. We can still do it, but we must, you know, like take advantage of whatever's out there, and we know the American people are dissatisfied. Thanks again on that.
Yes, I just wanted to, if I can take one or two more minutes. Since
go ahead, Joe. Go ahead.
About this whole thing with the death of Scalia from the Supreme Court, that it took place under very mysterious circumstances. And I want to preface it by saying that, of course, he was one of the most right-wing pigs that's ever been around. But and he's really in the spirit of the Dred Scott decision, that Supreme Court injustice, as it called him. But the thing is that the death took place under mysterious circumstances. He died alone, and he was pronounced dead from miles away by a justice of the peace who pronounced him dead over the telephone and even diagnosed him as having a heart attack, having no medical background herself and having no even slight observation of the dead body, which was found lying on his bed with a pillow over his face. And I was just thinking that some of the things that are being done now are so contrived that they may have been afraid that somebody like even a Scalia, right-wing pig that he is, might have stood as some kind of an obstacle to something like the Trans-Pacific Partnership that places a new international body as having totally compromising the sovereignty of the United States government. He may have thought that that was unconstitutional, for example, and even from a right-wing point of view, been an obstacle, and that may be why he was eliminated, even though in general, again, he was told right-wing pig. So,
well, you have to always pay attention to what is the major interest of the corporate America, and we don't know what they're doing, and we can't discount that. You know, it's, but with that said, keep your eyes open, keep them on the ball. Is there anything else you have to say on that, Joel?
Well, again, the suspicious that Scalia, it's in a context of what's become, to a large degree, a government by assassination and by a dictatorship of the intelligence agencies, spy agencies, and the political police. And,
well, it's interesting that you would say that, because just earlier this evening, Lynn and I were talking about all of the suspicious deaths of the people who might have said something or were leaning towards saying something in the UN, in American government, if they think you're going to say something, in the prisons, something that's going to hurt them, they try to take you out of there. This is why we must have a unit, an organization, a unity of purpose in our struggle. So with that, I'm going to have to pass on to Mary Neal, and to remind people, those who must be protected are the people in the prisons. As Queen Mother used to say, they are the most vulnerable and they are the most deserving of our support. And so with that, I'm going to go on to Mary Neal. Are you there, Mary?
I am here. How are you? I'm so glad to see
you. Hi, Mary. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. And you were so right, Mr. Pointer. The people in the prisons and people on our streets who are subjected to police violence and imprisoned to violence from corrections officers who have lost their right, it seems, of self-protection. They are the most vulnerable people. And lately, increasingly, the people being killed behind bars are women, usually black women, but also Caucasian women, Latinos, and Native Americans. I'm at Facebook, Mary Neal, and you can just look at all the women who are being killed behind bars. And I want you to know that, to my idea, this thing really took momentum when the U.S. Congress got up and applauded a standing ovation for Washington, D.C. Police Department when they murdered Miriam Carey, who was an unarmed mother who drove her car and bumped a pole right there by the White House. She bumped one of the concrete, you know how they have the gates of the White House, and then a sidewalk, and then they have those little poles right there where people park. We all heard her referred to as a gate crasher, when in fact, she was nowhere near the gate. She bumped a little pole, and it could have been completely by accident, but right away, she started being chased and shot at. A black mother who had her baby in the car was chased throughout our nation's capital and executed by Washington, D.C. police. And then days later, U.S. Congress stood and gave a standing ovation. Now, as far as I know, that declared the open season on black women in America. Because increasingly, when you read about deaths in custody and deaths by police, the victim is female. And very often, these are women of color. But also, I want to remind you that a woman was killed when she was incarcerated her first night. She died her first night in incarceration in Pennsylvania. She was a mother who was a Ms. Denino. She was a mother who was incarcerated because she could not pay her children's truancy charges. Her children had been skipping school. She had over $1,000 truancy charge, and she could not immediately pay it. And so she was remanded to jail for a short sentence, and she died her first night. So women are being killed. They're being killed on the street by police. They're being killed behind bars. And I just want to remind you that this is still the administration that supposedly is for women's rights. And I want to remind everyone that the right to life must be held more closely than any other right, because if you're not alive, you're not going to enjoy freedom of speech. You won't be able to take advantage of freedom of speech and freedom of press and all the other rights that we supposedly have, which are also under attack. The right to life has got to be superior. And we've got to enforce
and we must include with that, Mary Neal, the right of self-defense and self-determination. But may I cut in to say we're coming to the end of the program, and I would be remiss if we didn't talk about Reverend Pinckney, who's serving time in a Michigan prison because he attempted a recall against Whirlpool, a corporation, a candidate supported by the corporations. He was the first one who told us about water in Benton Harbor, Michigan, which Whirlpool hadn't paid their bill for. And I say, well, years later, we see what happened in Flint, Michigan, water. They gave us poison water. But it wasn't because we weren't told. Reverend Pinckney told us about fiscal emergency managers. He told us about water. He told us about funds for corporations. And he's in jail only because we couldn't muster enough support to keep him from going there. And again, we're getting close to another program, an end of a program. You have anything else for us, Mary?
All right, we want to acknowledge our guests. I'm just going to read the last four digits of your number. If you want to give us a shout-out, you can. I see someone, the last four digits are 5646. 5646, are you in the house?
Yes, good evening. This is Catherine Carter.
Yes.
How's everybody doing?
We're doing fine, thank you.
Okay, glad to be here. I would like to know the gentleman that named the book about Hitler.
Yes,
the name of the book was Mein Kampf.
The name of it is what?
Mein Kampf.
It means Mein Kampf is German. It means my struggle. And this is Larry Pinckney speaking. Go ahead, please.
Okay, Mein Kampf. Okay. All right, but thank you very much. I'm going to read that book.
M-I-E-N, and the second word is K-A-M-P-F, okay? And any library will have a copy, and any bookstore will have a copy, if you just give them those two words and mention Hitler, all right?
Okay, thank you.
Can I mention something before we go on? The police woman in Buffalo, New York, they got fired after 19 years because she came in and stopped another police from beating up an unarmed and a handcuffed prisoner. They beat her up and fired her. I don't hear a lot of people talking about it. I was wondering if y'all had heard about that situation. Buffalo,
we
New
hadn't
York.
Heard about
her name
that
is Carol Horn.
We hadn't heard about that particular situation, but we know the unions that are supposed to help us have never helped people of
no,
color.
No, but they going against her, the unions and everybody. You know, talking about taking opportunities when they come about. Here's a black police woman that stood up to try to protect a black individual that was being brutalized, and then she gets brutalized. She's on that force for 19 years. She needs 20 to make her pension, and they fired her and refused to give her a pension. We should take advantage of those type things and help these individuals that's trying to do something, police.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I'm with you. I'm with you. We'll take that up next week. And
okay.
Again, another hour has passed by, and love you all, and thank you, thank you, thank you.
Good night.